What's happening, Catskill? You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This is Chuck Ansbacher, Broody Duck, signing off.
Hello, listeners. My name is Rachel Ann Schulman from the Camper Hudson Radio Group. Camper Hudson Radio Program Live by Life Interview. Noble guests in the local swing countries are from the local organization and ask them what they do in their communities, what shaped their life of growing up where they are now. We also occasionally talk about sport news and other subjects and interests, such as the upcoming community events and culture happening in the area. Tune in on the fourth Sunday of every month at 3:30 in the afternoon on 90.7 FM. Past interviews are available at waveform.org. Thanks for listening and supporting the radio for an open airs at 90.7 FM WGXC. Thank you.
Turnout on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the WGXC Catskill Studio to learn about Wave Farm's WGXC, tour the studio, record a station ID or PSA, or pick up a sticker. The WGXC Catskill Studio is located at 393 Main Street in Catskill. Come on by for a visit and see how you can get involved in your local community radio station.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Mayuko Fujino of Copeg, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, May 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 37 degrees in Steventown to 43 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 51 degrees. Pollen levels are going to be crazy high again today. It will also be calm and comfortable. We get a high temperature of 72 degrees at 5 p.m. After dark, rain shows up, less than a half of inch falls as temperatures drop to 52 degrees. Tomorrow will be warm and gross. A high of 80 happens at 4 p.m. and rain falls all day. Overnight, more rain, low of 57. Saturday, you guessed it, rain again with some bonus thunder in the afternoon. We get a high of 72 at 3 p.m. Sunday is still looking wet with a high of 63. Sunset today will be at 7:38 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:47 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare. Chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 449 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently impacted on all bands with an S4 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 77. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
The Public News Service Thursday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. Kamala Harris blasted President Donald Trump's first 100 days, saying Trump's agenda represents a wholesale abandonment of American ideals and that she's inspired by the courage of people speaking up against the administration's actions. That from CNN. The report, Harris said, we are living in a moment where the checks and balances on which we have historically relied have begun to buckle. CNN notes the Commerce Department reported the U.S. economy had its worst quarter since 2022 as Trump's significant policy changes unnerved consumers and businesses. The president blamed the negative report on President Joe Biden. Next, some New Yorkers are at a higher risk of exposure to forever chemicals in drinking water.
An environmental working group analysis finds 189 of the state's water systems have PFAS levels above the federal standard, but less than New York's standard. Adrian Esposito with the Citizens Campaign for the Environment says Long Island faces a higher risk of PFAS exposure since all its water comes from the same aquifer.
Because we have a kind of a geologically unique drinking water source, it has made it very vulnerable to the types of industry and any kind of illegal dumping that occurs on the surface of Long Island.
Other reports find more than 3,400 New York waterways contain forever chemicals. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
Next to Mississippi, where new data shows a 27% increase in rape kit testing since the state implemented a 2023 law requiring all new sexual assault evidence to be processed.
While officials report progress on addressing the backlog, advocates caution that the full scope of untested kits remains unknown without a complete statewide inventory. The rise follows the required testing of all new sexual assault evidence, which experts say is helping to debunk common assumptions about sexual predators. Ilsa Connect of the Joyful Heart Foundations and the Backlog Initiative says testing is uncovering critical patterns about offenders.
Rapists are not specialists. They commit all kinds of crimes, anything from homicide to burglary to domestic violence, child abuse, you name it. They commit crimes against people they know and people they don't know. They rape acquaintances and strangers, so they cross over, many of them. And they really don't stop until they're stopped.
I'm Tramell Gomes.
Meantime, the lack of quality child care for infants and toddlers cost Colorado nearly $3 billion each year and lost earnings, productivity, and revenue. But an initiative in Mesa County shows what's possible when local governments, businesses, and civic groups team up. Keller Ann Rubel is with the data firm BridgeCare.
So that they can meet the needs of working families and invest in their early care workforce pipeline. And because of that investment, they have now 270 seats at this child care center, and they've completely eliminated their child care desert.
She says officials saw a huge demand for child care in the town of Clifton, but no providers, so they built a new facility. It provides child care and also trains new caregivers. This is Public News Service. The number of Kentucky kids enrolled in preschool increased in 2024, along with the state spending per child. That's according to new data from the National Institute for Early Education Research.
The Commonwealth spent around $6,500 per child during the last academic year, an increase of more than $800 from the prior year. Study co-author and senior director at the Institute, Steve Barnett, says it's unrealistic to think states could replace cuts to Head Start funding amid the Trump administration's proposed freezes of federal grant funding.
Particularly replace it overnight. If the program is suddenly defunded, states are going to have to step up and figure out what to do if that happens.
He adds, if Head Start funding is eliminated, access to public preschool will decline in several states by more than 10 percentage points, and in some by 20. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
And mental health counselors are focused on Nebraska's high rate of binge drinking. That during Alcohol Awareness Month, which just wrapped up.
Nebraska's binge drinking rate is among the highest in the nation, and the number of alcohol-related deaths is on the rise. Alcohol was blamed for at least 720 fatalities in 2020, the latest year data were available. Aileen Brady, CEO of Omaha-based Community Alliance, says alcohol abuse and addiction affects families and friendships, but can also lead to safety issues among employees who may be alcohol dependent.
If their reactions are not as sharp, if they're not sleeping well, and if they're distracted with the sense of needing to have that drink, it's going to affect our workplaces as well.
Brady adds alcohol and other substance abuse disorders affect at least 65% of Nebraskans seeking mental health treatment at Community Alliance. Nationwide, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health says more than 224 million people 12 and older report having consumed alcohol during their lifetime. I'm Mark Moran.
Finally, the unmistakable smell of hamburgers or steak on the outdoor grill will soon be making its way to your neighborhood. With the weather warming up, people are reminded to avoid using harmful products to keep those grills clean.
Environmental experts say using chemical sprays to get rid of that grease and grime can create harmful emissions when that grill is fired up again by releasing harmful gases into the air. John O'Brien of Green Maids Cleaning suggests a different approach involving baking soda and vinegar. Get started, he says, remove food debris using a brush that doesn't contain microplastics. Then get together a healthy mix in a spray bottle.
Do equal parts white vinegar, equal parts water, and just kind of spray it down and let it soak.
Lastly, sprinkle on some baking soda to make the scrubbing part easier. Not only does this protect natural resources, health officials say it also prevents chemicals from getting into the food you prepare. I'm Mike Moen.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Tuned into the Thursday afternoon show on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. Here, broadcasting live from the WGXC Catskill studio on Main Street, my name's Justin Calder, and I have here with me Paige, Ruane. Say hi, Paige.
Hi, thanks for having me, Justin. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. As I mentioned to you, this is a limited run show. I'm filling in for a programmer who is in an election cycle and just putting on some Main Street radio here every Thursday from 4 to 5 for next few weeks. And you are my first guest. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel special.
Well, aren't we all in some way? And yes. It's really an honor to have you here.
Thank you.
So why don't you give yourself a little introduction for our listeners?
Sure. So my name is Paige Ruane. I'm a native New Yorker. Live in Austerlitz. I'm involved with the Austerlitz Climate Committee there. But I'm a co-founder of Partners for Climate Action, which is a local nonprofit. And we support local communities who are taking action on climate action in their communities and ecological restoration. And we're 5 years old. We really believe that local solutions can happen from the knowledge that local communities can, you know, possess. So we base that's really our theory of change. And we do a number of programs. Mm-hmm. I can get into that, but tell me where you'd like to go.
Well, that sounds just great generally, as a good approach to, climate change and all sorts of ecological initiatives to be community-based, from the ground up rather than top-down policies.
Right? Yes, exactly.
Is there kind of an origin story for thinking about that?
Sure, yeah. For sure. I actually used to work internationally. I worked in Africa for a while with traditional healers who had herbal remedies for things like HIV and cancer and malaria. And I was helping some scientists. I worked on a nonprofit going there to help do clinical trials around their medicine. So I worked internationally and then realized, like, I was trying to put them into our system, and what they were doing there was really working well for them. The origin story really is I have a background in psychology and documentary film and radio. And I was doing a bunch of reporting, a bunch of stories I happened to be doing on the climate crisis. This was in 2018. In 2019, I had dinner with a good friend of mine and a mentor, really, Bob Dandrew. And we were just going out to dinner in Tivoli. We were going to see a storytelling event, The Porch, which I think happens right here. And we both confessed to each other that we were really concerned and upset about what was going on, you know, what we were hearing in the news, the IPCC, the international government panel on climate change at the UN had just come out with its recent paper, and they do regular papers on the state of the climate and the environment, and they had come out with a really kind of code red message, alarming, saying we had 10 years to really reverse things that were going in a dangerous direction with regard to the climate. So he and I, it just sort of emerged. I said, I'm so, you know, worried, but I also feel that I don't just want to report at this point myself. I want to actually do something. I want to jump in and act. And he said, I've been feeling the same way. And so we just at that moment just, why don't we work together? He suggested it. So we, he had great nonprofit experience. I had a little. Mm-hmm. And we did this, what we call a landscape analysis for the New World Foundation in New York, where he was working, looking at what was already happening here in the Hudson Valley. So we didn't want to just come up with our own brilliant ideas, you know, and be out of touch with the work that was happening. So we really took some time, some months to interview people locally here and get to know the work that was happening and understand how we might contribute. So that's what we did.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I really like that approach. Wow, yeah, that's fascinating. So you mentioned that you guys have plenty of programs.
Yes.
Are there any that you would like to highlight right now?
Sure. So we have ecological restoration grants. We just had a round, and we'll have likely another round next year. I should say we raise funds from private donors and foundations. So we're always raising the money that we give away. Mm. Everything's dependent on that. But we've been successful in raising money. So we've done a couple of rounds of ecological restoration grants, and they are grants, you know, that will help people to get their hands dirty and put their hands in the soil. But municipalities and nonprofits can apply to do things like plant trees, start composting programs in their towns, riparian buffers, which is planting trees along rivers, which, you know, cleans the water and keeps it from eroding, pollinator habitat. We've also, from there, we've had a new program start, Pollinate HV, which is pollinatehv.org. You can go, and we've created all of these resources for you to plant pollinator habitat in your backyard or your town park. There are tons of resources there. We're really also all about bioregionalism, which is really a philosophy that natural boundaries, ones set by nature, are a better way to think than our political boundaries, our county and town boundaries, because, you know, rivers don't respect those boundaries. Right. So we are developing a fund that will work at the regional scale, helping the people who will decide how the money gets spent will be, you know, experts in certain aspects of the ecology, like water and farming. And so that we're developing that. We've had a program in the past called Local Champions. I don't know if you've heard of the Climate Smart Communities program in New York.
I have not, no.
It's a program of the DEC and several other departments of government. And it's basically over 100 actions that are laid out for a municipality to do in terms of climate and ecological work. And it's fantastic. It's also can be hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
So we realized that this is one of the gaps we initially identified when we were doing research. And we brought together a cohort of municipal volunteers, the leaders who were willing to help their town move through those actions, and brought them together in a group so that they could share information, ask questions that they thought were really stupid maybe, and network, you know, with each other. And we brought in other experts to help them and gave them a grant for their time if they needed it.
Interesting. I love that approach, again, of going into communities and just announcing who wants to do something about this issue or about an issue that you might think is important, relevant to the ecology, economics especially. Seems like it involves kind of multimodal ways of thinking about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you said that PCA isn't funded by any government grants, right?
No, we've applied for them.
Yeah.
We did just get a government grant, and we're just one, I believe, is, and we are also, right, it's mostly foundations. We were funded by Bloomberg for some climate, some youth climate action grants.
Yeah.
But yeah, not, I guess one state grant we've gotten so far.
Yeah, interesting. And yeah, it's interesting that you saw kind of a need that was also kind of a gap in the DEC programming, mm-hmm. and you were able to fill that, because governmental initiatives, as good as they can be sometimes, can kind of trip over themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So
exactly.
I'm wondering if that frees you up a little bit to not be so ensnared sometimes with bureaucracy.
Yeah, it was great. we just felt like we could jump in and help with communication around it and make it more fun and community oriented. And we, I'm friends with Dazzle Ekblad, who runs the Climate Smart Communities program for the whole state, and she's a brilliant woman. And what they've designed is so special. And you know, many communities know about it. Mm-hmm. The more action, they've kind of gamified it, actions. So the more actions a town does, they'll reach levels like bronze and silver, and then once they do, they're more eligible for grants. But yeah, we tried to make it cool and fun, yeah. and bring people together to commiserate when it was just so wonky, it could be soul sucking.
Yeah. You gotta work with what you got. Yes. All right. Well, also there's a upcoming deadline for one of your programs, right?
That's right. Thanks for asking. We have a new training and grant program called Funding Futures Together We Decide. So this is really a grant and support from us. It's also a cohort program. It'll be a year long. And this is something different that we're trying. We're going to help communities run a listening campaign in their towns. Municipalities can apply, but also a nonprofit can apply. So anyone who has a nonprofit status, so if you are a nonprofit or partnering with one that is tax exempt, we can offer you this grant. Basically, it's a $22,000 grant, up to $22,000 grant for this listening campaign, and we're also going to help communities learn about reliable funding streams that they can use to make these projects happen once they have this listening campaign and they gain consensus, nonpartisan, broad-based consensus in their town about their environmental priorities. So my colleague Vanessa and I developed this, Vanessa Bertozzi, who's also a village trustee in Rhinebeck Village. We had done these two other programs. She and I mainly worked on the Local Champions program, and then we did another program called Building Decarbonization Grants, where we were helping municipalities and nonprofits get their buildings off of fossil fuels. So both of those programs were highly technical. We took a step back and we thought, how can we really leverage people's actions, their energy? How can we leverage the efforts we put into this daily work? There are so many dedicated people, and I'll just say, like, having done this work, it's a real privilege to be able to see, to have a window into how much work is actually happening, and these people who are doing the grinding work every day, and they're the unsung heroes, you know. So how can we empower them even more? We saw that there's so much good planning that happens in towns, but it often sits on a shelf. Right. What are the other blockers? I mean, political will and will sometimes in general, you have certain actors in a town who are the ones who show up at the town board meeting or the ones who join the committees, you know, and then are the other residents engaged sometimes? But how can you get, you know, hear everyone's voice? And we realized as well, the muscle memory for having community conversations, we've lost it. We've lost this sort of town square places where we used to go and commune and get to know our neighbors. So we've really designed this program to help remedy that. And we know also that town boards and village boards would really like to hear from their community, but they don't have a lot of capacity to do more than they're doing. They're, you know, not paid a lot, and they've got a lot on their plates. So this is basically like an outreach campaign.
Anyway,
I can stop there if you have any questions.
Oh, no. It just seems like it's continuing the good work that you guys are prone to do, which is, like you said, seeing the good work that people are doing and connecting others, really connecting people and making sure people's voices are heard. And, you know, it just reminds me, a lot of what WGXC does as well.
Yes.
When you talk about community conversations. So I guess like-minded organizations in some ways we
yes.
are.
Yes. Yeah, I really appreciate WGXC for giving people so many different people voices.
Yeah, well, I see that affinity there, and I guess that's knowing WGXC. I really appreciate seeing that in an organization like Partners for Climate Action, doing work kind of on the ground and out in the open, right? I mean, part of that Funding Futures grant involves getting people outside, as I understand, was one mm-hmm. of the steps. So
yeah.
do you want to go through like a short little step-by-step of how that goes?
Sure, yeah, in terms of the programming, and I can yeah. also share...
Yeah, to give people... Sorry, just to give people, like, something to bite into. It's like, what does it actually look like, this process, this training program?
For sure. So it will be a one-year cohort experience. So we're going to be meeting on Zoom mostly once a week. We'll have office hours. We'll have guest speakers. The guest speakers will speak about three different things, projects that might be inspiring that other towns have done. However, we really want to be clear that this is going to be a campaign where you find out what your residents, and I mean all the residents you can reach, you know, like your entire zip code, what do they want to see happen in terms of your environmental priorities in your mm-hmm. town? So we're going to have guest speakers and coaching on the process of reaching out. We're going to have guest speakers on projects that might be inspiring that have been successful in other towns. And then we're going to talk about financial models, financial mechanisms that are reliable that you can use, not just grants, but other things I can talk about. And the process of this listening campaign will be, we're going to really walk you through it. There'll be a point person. So you can, there's a $22,000 grant. It will pay for the costs of these events that you'll have. Maybe you'll have a series of them. It really depends on what your community decides to do. But we're thinking there's going to be an event or two with, you know, town board meetings, village board meetings aren't really conducive to dialogue, but we want these meetings to be conducive to dialogue. And we were inspired by Ecological Citizens Project, which is a nonprofit based down in Garrison. They did something called a community congress, and they put up a mic and had a fun event. They had babysitters, they had music, they had food, and anyone could say what they thought would be, propose a project for their town in 3 minutes. And a lot of kids did it. And at the end, they had recorded all of the ideas. They put it on a ballot and they mailed it out. Either they had a survey online or they mailed it out to everyone in the zip code by mail. And they got out the vote. You know, what do you want to see of these proposed projects by your neighbors? They got back a bunch of votes, and then they had top three and then listed the others. But people said what they really wanted to see happen. And then they had meetings with for volunteers to come who wanted to actually make those things happen. Mm. So we were really inspired by them. And we also wanted to add the funding piece because we know that can be the hurdle as okay. well for communities. So there are a few different funding mechanisms that we've become aware of. You know, maybe listeners would be aware of them, but maybe they're a bit more obscure. One is there's something called a community preservation fund. And you make a plan, a community preservation plan. You have to be authorized by the state legislature, but certain counties already are authorized. Ulster is. And you basically, you have a vote in your town about whether you can charge a tax on house sales. It's called a real estate transfer tax. Mm. And so you can, let's say the median price for a house is $400,000. So communities will decide, okay, any houses above that 400,000, we're going to charge a 2% tax. And you're authorized to do that once you get the authority. And you can put that money into a fund that can do, can address environmental projects in your community.
Yeah, and the community decides what those projects are. So it's not,
yes,
you're not skimming off the top for something people aren't involved in. They exactly. very much decide what parts of their local ecology, right, they want to protect.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, you're really hitting a point. You know, something Vanessa and I learned was you can create the most beautiful plan for your community, you know, maybe a consultant or a group of people. But if your community, your residents are not involved in the plan from the outset, they get angry. They're not interested in the plan. People want to be consulted. They want to be a part of it. We've seen this over and over. So exactly yeah. like that, the community preservation plans are great for that.
Yeah, it almost doesn't matter how much something offends someone. As long as you ask them about it, usually if you start a conversation, you know, I mean, obviously some things are over the line, but
yeah.
just saying politically, if somebody's, you know, doesn't think something's a good idea, usually, like you said, if you ask people their opinion and if they feel like they've been able to weigh in, you can find a middle ground.
Yes, exactly.
At least, you know, on a certain scale.
Yeah, it's so. True. In fact, we're going to be bringing in experts. When I say, you know, there'll be speakers about the process, there'll be speakers to help people communicate with their neighbors and to have those productive conversations where you are respectful and you ask and find genuine interest, you know, in what your neighbors think. And there's a brain trust to be tapped into there. You know, there's wisdom in yeah. every community.
Yeah, totally. Especially because, I mean, it's such a common denominator, local ecology, I find, and the natural resources in our area. It's
yes.
It goes way beyond politics. I mean, the natural resources that are accessible to all of us, we should all have an interest in protecting. It's just a matter of, you know, politics and economics sometimes get in the way.
Yes, exactly. It's what makes us healthy. And it's the basis for our wealth,
mm-hmm.
which we forget, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So another financial mechanism is community solar that is community owned. So community solar in general is great. Often a developer will come in from outside, and it's great. They help the community. The community has solar, has lower bills, but there are also models where the community can actually own that, and all the revenue that the residents pay for their solar can go right back into a fund mm-hmm. to help the community do actions of their choosing. So that's another one.
Nice.
Yeah. Again, one of our partner organizations, Citizens Climate, it's Municipal Solar Partners is another organization that's just come about where they are going to be mentoring communities to do this. And this is the same person, Jason Angel, and his wife, Jocelyn, who invented the community Congress process. They're going to come in and talk about the process and coach our cohort, but they're also going to show communities how to use this model if they'd like.
Mm. So these are tools available in along the way in that same funding futures program.
Exactly. So it's basically about participatory democracy, learning what your community wants to do, what you all care about, reconnecting with each other. Once you've established that and more trust, then we're going to help you actually find the funding, you know, just introduce you to different models. Like we'll have people coming in and talking through other ways, like, you know, banks have community funds. You know, how do you approach them? Or local foundations, there's crowdfunding, and this is reallocating, but there's something called participatory budgeting where more of the community can be involved in deciding how maybe a certain portion of the budget goes. Mm. There are different models, but mainly the first two that I mentioned, the real estate transfer tax and the community solar and the revenue coming from the community solar, those are you can bank on those.
Yeah, so those are two kind of proven mechanisms, at least for certain municipalities.
That's right.
Two options, and who knows what else comes up when everybody gets involved.
Exactly.
And just as a reminder, I'm talking to Paige Ruain from Partners for Climate Action about some programs that you guys are offering, specifically funding futures. So when's the deadline for that?
The deadline is May 23rd. We have an info session tomorrow, May 2nd at noon. And you Great. Can go to our website to learn, to sign up for that, to register. You can go to climateactionhv.org/fundingfutures. There you'll find our application process, and you can sign up for our Zoom if that's helpful. There's also a recording of the April info session where people came and who were interested in applying and asked questions.
Cool.
Yeah. And you also, under the step one drop down menu, you'll see all the things that we'd need from you if you are interested in applying. We try to make all of our applications, our grant applications and program applications, not onerous, because we understand state grants are, and we want people to go out and do the work and not be burdened by that.
Yeah.
There are a few steps. So there's a simple online application. We need you to get a letter of support or a resolution from your town board. And we have, boilerplates for that, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. A draft budget, which we know will be draft later on. You can define that. Letters of support from your community stakeholders. So, this will be a process of reaching out to your neighbors and institutions in your town. So we really want to see you start that and see who might be supportive of you. Mm. Letter of support from the town, from the community budget, online application. And there's one more thing I'm forgetting, but it's there on our website.
It's all there on the web. And what's that address again?
Yeah, it's climateactionhv.org/fundingfutures.
Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, and I should mention, applicants from 6 counties are eligible, and that's Greene, Columbia, Dutchess, Ulster, Orange, and Putnam.
Mm. Right.
And nonprofits as well as municipalities. And we need a point person who we're calling the Funding Futures Fellow to come to our Zooms and to be a part of the cohort. We're thinking that it'll be 12 hours about of work per week, but we're agnostic as to how you split up the work. So it's a $22,000 grant. $10,000 will go towards the administration of, the events and the mailers and getting out the vote. And up to $12,000 is available for people who need money for their time. But we're totally agnostic as to how you break that up. You could maybe be a volunteer who doesn't need to be paid, but you want to pay an intern. Or maybe you do want to be paid some, but you're going to share the work with two others. We just need one person to commit to coming to our Zooms, which will be probably just an hour and a half guest speaker per week, and then 1 hour office hours we'll be holding just for questions. Mm-hmm. And you had asked about the nature piece. We will be going out into nature for half a day and have a workshop somewhere special in your town with the stakeholders that you've gathered, about 10 people. And we'll just be kind of coalescing and bonding and asking questions and gearing up to do this together and spending time.
Yeah, in the right place.
Exactly. Right.
That seems important, that element of it. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing initiative to connect people and to come up with really crowdsourced solutions, it seems like,
yes,
to what can be an overwhelming problem of a rapidly changing environment, and ecology that's, you know, weakening, really, all of our natural resources. I need some help and some careful thought, and really the first step is really talking to each other and coming up with an actionable plan. It seems like that's the desired end result. And so what would people provide really at the end of this? Can you remind me of that?
Sure. Yeah, I can tell you. I can tell you some examples of some wonderful things that have happened in other towns that are inspiring to us. And we're going to bring guest speakers to talk about these things and how they did it.
Yeah.
But just to be clear again, like we want the ideas to come from that community. So if they're excited about these ideas, great, but they very well will have their own ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But some communities like Chatham, for instance, has done the community preservation plan and fund, and they have a real estate transfer tax that they just implemented, and that goes towards preserving farmland. It's kind of incredible. We spoke with Danal Collins, the supervisor there, and people there who are making this happen. There are 90 farms in Chatham, and you know, I live in Austerlitz. I think there are maybe 4 or 5. That was
working,
unusual.
90
yeah,
working farms.
90 working farms that produce food. And this was by design. 20 years ago, they had the forethought. And so that was really inspiring to me and Vanessa. We just want to think about what can we do now that will create success in the future. And Chatham really did that. For another community, maybe it's about supporting forest health. Our forests are really at risk at the moment. A lot of people don't realize that, the deer overpopulation is a serious problem. If we don't deal with it, our forests are going to collapse in 60 years because they're eating the understory and there isn't regrowth and regeneration the way there used to be.
Yeah.
And they like the natives, and I'm sure you know.
Yeah, it's a part of it is a predation problem, lack of a predator, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's crazy. There's like 10 deer in the back of my yard some mornings when I wake up.
Yes.
And, they're really causing some damage out there in the forests.
They really are. I think I heard a statistic that there should be something like 5 deer per square mile, and there's something like 115.
That's crazy.
Yeah. We actually did a webinar. We do educational webinars called the Morning Coffee Series. It's under events on our website. And Eli Arno recently did a talk on that. And it's a really interesting history as to why this is the case. And humans are behind it in terms of the imbalance happening. So I think we need to be the ones to remedy it.
Makes sense. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both of those issues are. Where was the forest-based solutions? What town was that?
Oh, that's actually. I don't have a town in mind, but we have a forest health task force working on building a coalition to figure out solutions to that problem at the moment. But places like the Cary Institute and the Columbia Land Conservancy are really thinking deeply on this issue. People create deer exclosures, but we need to think that's not going to do it.
Yeah.
We need to think about how to deal with the deer.
Comprehensive
yes.
plans that are a little bit more, you could say consistent, right?
Exactly.
Ranging throughout the region. It's not. Doesn't cut it to have all these kind of different solutions moving in different directions, right?
Exactly, because the decisions of one community affect another in the region. We are interconnected. We have to act that way. So that's why we're thinking also through bioregionalism and how, as a region, we can collaborate.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you bring, like, say, these examples of successful models, I imagine, you know, the closest available model is ideal. You know, your neighboring yes. county, seeing what they came up with, because, like yeah. you said, the creek that runs through their county also runs through yours, does not discriminate.
Yes, exactly. This is why it was such a joy to do the Local Champions program, because we realized so many people are working in a silo, and we all need to get together and tell each other what we've done, what's worked, and even learn from each other's mistakes, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's not necessary for this, you know, these type of solutions all the time. Is to think outside the box and come up with something new all the time, you know, that right. kind of capitalist drive.
Exactly, exactly.
of innovation.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, every community is unique. And on the other, we can help each other because yeah. people do figure things out. Other things that have inspired us, there are a group of communities who've dealt with landfill methane capture. And I believe they're in a cohort. I believe it might, I'm not sure who's leading that cohort, but I know the town of Northeast is involved. So they've figured out, you know, methane escapes from landfills. So they've figured out how to actually capture it. And that's a huge deal. Mm. Green affordable housing. We're going to have a speaker, Steve Rosenberg, who is working, he used to be the ED of Scenic Hudson, and now he's working to marry efforts, which are sometimes seen to be conflicting, but of affordable housing and conservation. There are ways to make both happen.
Yeah, I mean, so many of these problems that communities are dealing with up here are so intertwined, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And you need to kind of have a holistic approach, really, to be effective.
Absolutely.
It seems like. So, yeah, you guys are really thinking about it in the right way, I think.
Mm, thank you.
And by you guys, I mean you're empowering others mm. to really come up with solutions to their own problems. So, once again, I've been speaking to Paige Ruane of Partners for Climate Action in the Hudson Valley here. And do you want to give just one more web address? And
sure. Yeah, that's climateactionhv.org/fundingfutures.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much, Paige.
Thank you so much, Justin. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, and you have been listening to the WGXC Thursday Afternoon Show with your host, Justin Calder. Put on some tunes now, and we'll talk to you in a little bit, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in to this edition of the Thursday Afternoon Show with Justin Calder. I believe next episode will be joined by my occasional co-host, Rebecca Borer. And I'd like to thank again Paige Ruane for coming on for this episode. And she mentioned that the Partners for Climate Action have a Climate Action Mixer, a moving event for folks who care about ecology and climate action in our region to connect over food and music and just generally get together. You can sign up at their newsletter, which you can find at their website, which is climateactionhv.org. And we've got a few minutes here, but I figure I'll read off a few events in our community off the community calendar on WGXC.org. So today, there is actually Thursday Stewardship Days over at the Hike Preserve. Never know how to pronounce that one. I think it's the Hike Preserve and Biological Research Station. That's over there in Rensselaerville. You can join Stewardship Coordinator Garrett Christine Holmes, or Garrett Chris Holm, every Thursday to tackle the invasive species that threaten the health of the preserve. And that's at the Hayek Preserve every Thursday from 10 to noon. So if you missed today, catch it next Thursday. But there is other things going on today, one of which is an All Things Audio free monthly workshop series, and that is actually beginning, well, in a few minutes. or should I say,